Hello. Welcome to our CMD Bite Size series. In these podcasts, we will be exploring a range of ministry and theological issues. Today I'm speaking with the Reverend John Etock, Dean of Retired Clergy in Truro Diocese. We'll be exploring how retired clergy are enabled to flourish in their vocation and ministry. Welcome, John, and thank you for joining me today. Could you begin by telling me what's involved in the role of Dean of Retired Clergy?
Well, quite a lot of things, really. A whole list of stuff I might just quickly mention. So the first thing I really do quite a lot of every 6 weeks or so is a Prepare to Retire Well and Beyond group, which is a group for people who are considering retirement or bound to move away from being what I call an office holder, because priests never really retire. And we sit together in a reflective practice group. I try to focus on three big questions. What are you retiring from? What are you retiring to? And what will it mean to be a priest who's no longer an office holder? Because the fact is that priests, when they kneel before a bishop, are priests forever till their dying day, subject to canon law and everything. What else do? Well, I collaborate and provide leadership to some chaplains. There are four chaplains, and we have them strategically placed around the diocese. And at the moment, they're all women. I try to facilitate conversations, and I have access to the Episcopal College if something is bothering me or I want to field something back. I try to encourage clergy, all the priests who are no longer office holders, to attend CMD days, which there are open to them, and some of them do. I also identify, I'm trying to deliver specific courses that might affect them. I'm also encouraging them to offer their skills and their gifts, because here is great body of wisdom and gifts and skills that the church invested in a long time ago, but they still carry them, and the people may still be competent to help their deanery, their diocese, the diocese, or their parish in offering those skills, if they're acceptable to their stipendiary priest, who is their designated responsible person. And I try, because we've got a lot of them, I try to help people ease into the diocese in some way, possibly visiting them or making sure one of the chaplains does, and they all receive a letter from me.
Okay, thank you. That brings us nicely onto the kind of next area about what provision does the Diocese of Truro make to support retired clergy?
The normal routes for support of retired clergy are that a priest who's in a parish, their normal care is that of the stipendiary priest, who is their responsible designated person, as they say. After that, it becomes the dean of that area, and then obviously the archdeacon and the bishop. But somewhere in between there, I'm there. And some of those people would consult me and say, please, could you do this? Because this is something a bit special or something that needs doing.
Yeah.
But it's the normal process is they're like any other parishioner in that area.
Yeah, and that's really ministry. Helpful to have those people to talk to and to kind of refer to and to get their experience. And I guess there's that alongside the CMD session about preparing to retire well, which is a much more practical thinking about housing, thinking about finance, those sorts of areas. So the two hand in hand, I guess.
Interestingly, my role does not involve pensions and housing, because those people are actually under contract at the time. So that goes to HR, to Louise.
Yeah. Okay. I imagine retiring as a member of clergy has some unique challenges, and you've already touched on some of those in your introduction by saying that people are actually, once they're ordained, they become a priest for life.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about some of those challenges which might be different from a secular context of perhaps retiring from being a doctor or retiring from another walk of life?
Well, first of all, this is dramatic thing that really happens. It's a bit like a divorce or a bereavement. So all those things about change occur. They're all the stages of grief that people go through consciously or unconsciously. It's everything to do with that change and that transition.
And I'm sure there are things that people look forward to in retirement as well. They might say that actually they're looking forward to not being responsible and not being an office holder in the same way.
And they're looking forward to choice. And if they're married, my Roman Catholic priest, who I sometimes help, say it's all right for Anglicans because this is a gift to their wife. And the wife may think entirely otherwise.
Or husband as well, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. And so how are some of those things different? Because I guess so much of what we do in life is wrapped up in, or so much of who we are in life is wrapped up in what we do quite often. So we identify ourselves by what job we have, what role we have. How is that different in a secular context to clergy?
I think the clergy carry on being recognised as priests, even when they're not in charge of a parish or an area or a deanery. Simply if they sit in a pew and somebody says, well, what are you doing? And they say, I'm retired. Or they mention they're ordained. Then, interesting, people in congregations especially, and even out in the world, treat you differently. They always have done. They say, oh dear. So how is it now? They treat you sometimes with respect, and out in the world maybe with disdain.
Okay.
A whole different way of being. In a way, a doctor can say, well, I no longer prescribe. I'm really sorry. You'll have to go somewhere. A teacher can literally stop teaching, or a lawyer stops practicing. Well, given certain safeguards, you can get permission to officiate and carry on. And that makes it very different. Although, I've got to say, as a therapist, I have to, every year, fulfil certain amounts of CPD and jump a little hoop, really, to carry on being legitimate.
Okay, and that kind of leads us on to, I think, some of the practical things about when a member of clergy retires. So the recommendation is that they take 6 months off, which gives them, I guess, some time to adjust. And then if they decide to apply for permission to officiate or PTO, I think the recommendation is that they officiate in a different parish to where they've normally been a priest.
Yeah, it doesn't always happen quite like that. Maybe it's better that happens, but sometimes it's not that easy, and somebody who's a self-supporting minister may still be living in the parish. It really does depend on the relationship with the stipendiary priest and also with the community. There's a whole issue of where do I fit in now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the 6 months thing, is that something that you would recommend?
The 6 months things is a recommendation, and it's probably a good thing to adjust for all sorts of psychological and probably spiritual reasons too.
Yeah. So I'm sure for many clergy, the support of retired clergy is a great encouragement to them to know that they've got kind of support to cover services, to help with different things, help with pastoral care, perhaps within their community. But as ever, where people are involved and the dynamics of different experiences and different expectations, I'm sure that there are times when this doesn't work as well as possible. Have you noticed anything in particular that leads to really good and flourishing working relationships between a stipendiary priest or a priest in charge or rector and the retired clergy in their parish?
It works well when they know one another well. It's all about relationships. And we know where we stand with one another and how it's going to be and what I've got to offer, what I'm not going to offer, what I choose to do. And it is about how my new being priest is. So it's all about, even without PTO, you're still a priest. How am I being priest? Am I an outward and visible sign of God's grace still? It's not all about taking services.
Yeah. And so how does that get established? Is it through a kind of working agreement that gets put into place or just conversations?
There is conversations, time spent together, and not being too special, but realising that the stipendiary has more to do. But you have to fill in a form. if you want PTO permission to officiate, called the Statement of Expectations. And I think it reads radical revision, and I'm hoping to do that with the Board for Ministry, the National Board for Ministry, because I've had recent conversations with them saying all these issues need a bit more time. And then you'll get value for money from all that investment you've had over the years, all that wisdom, all those gifts, all that expertise that this person may have, if they're capable of doing it, because... The other issue I'm well aware of is ageing. And one of the things is quietly monitoring competence and whether somebody is okay. We all get a bit doddery and forgetful and all that sort of thing. And we've got to be kind to these clergy at the same, as well as being sensitive to their needs and the way it is for them. And maybe their families. If a bishop... and it's in the bishop's gift, decides not to offer permission to officiate, often it's Mrs. Vicar or husband who gets upset for their partner and say, what's he done wrong? Well, you know, or even the family. So it's all a bit sensitive.
Yeah, I can imagine it's a very sensitive time. And I guess also that, I mean, you talk about the wisdom that people have, and that's fantastic, and their experience. But also there's the challenge then about bringing in new things and change. Yeah. And actually we're not, you know, generally we're not people of great change, are we, in general? And so actually for everybody, change is a challenge. And then looking back and kind of that challenge between the two different clergy can be difficult, I expect.
My aspiration is that... really, those who do have permission to officiate keep up to speed, up to date, and we have regular updates one way or another.
Yeah.
And that's something I still need to work on.
Okay. So can you give us an example of where someone has flourished in their ministry during retirement, and when there's been a really good, positive working relationship, maybe not naming people, but just kind of situation where you've come across that?
Given the fact that it's a bit like a bereavement and a divorce, that adjustment is quite something. So it takes some time to realise maybe I'm in a different place where I didn't minister before. Maybe I'm in a long way away from my original home, because people move into Cornwall and suddenly find, wow, it's really different here. So there's that adjustment that goes on. And people having been on the Prepare to Retire Well and Beyond group, that's... I think a bit of a revelation to them, and it's the slow adjustment. And we've had people who decided, oh, I should just go to this particular church, and then others who feel they've still got fire in their belly and they want to do more exciting things. So I've had somebody from up north who's come down here, who was really a bit of a pioneer minister all through his life, and now has found a settled. That took ages. I've also had another person who felt that celebrating the Eucharist was the big thing for him, and then realised it was actually great to go to church and not be up front. And he and his wife have now settled into a new routine that is pleasant for them and actually enjoying not doing things, but slowly deciding, yes, now is the time to get PTO. I've established my relationship with my incumbent and where the people where I live. I've found a new life for me.
Yeah. And I suppose one of the things that's really important for us in our Christian faith is the idea of Sabbath and actually taking that rest. And is there a kind of difficulty there with people going forward, thinking about what their new role is going to be? How do they take time for rest, time for that Sabbath?
Yeah, there's all that stuff. I'm a prime example of not being an office holder, even though you can call me a dean or whatever. My children are saying, Dad, stop working so hard. You're doing all sorts of other things. And recently I took a long holiday myself, and I'm starting. I think it's a case of readjusting as we go along towards, heaven, hopefully, or the end of our lives. Because that's the really distinctive thing, that this business of being ordained is an ontological change that lasts forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if somebody is struggling, where would you suggest they go for help?
Well, there are the obvious places. First of all, their incumbent, if that relationship is a good one. Then there's diocesan pastoral care and counselling service. Then they could see me, or they could ask, you know, and say, I need a visit because I really need to think about where I'm at and how it is, and I'm wondering what the way forward is.
Okay. And you've already mentioned that you're looking to change the some of the documents that are sent out from the national team. But is there anything in particular that you really hope to achieve in your role of Dean of Retired Clergy?
I think I want to achieve a sort of pathway that once you are no longer that office holder, but that priest forever, somehow we annually celebrate the fact that you're still a priest. And we did that last year. Some of the priests rang up and said, oh, they only want me to do more work. And I said, no, we just want to celebrate you being a priest, even if you haven't got PTO. The other thing, I want to revise the statement of expectations. I would like to get together an inventory of skills and gifts that people are willing to offer. I'd like to establish something which monitors a sort of a ministry of review, really, as part of the statement of expectations, to see how you are in every dimension, physically, mentally, spiritually. Maybe it needs a particular skill. It may be all right for me as a priest and a psychotherapist, but the people may be reluctant to say, well, actually, you know, maybe your cognitive skills aren't as good as they were. Or maybe you need to assist rather than be the main principal person.
And I'm sure those are all very challenging questions at a difficult period when people are adjusting as well. Thank you very much for joining me today and providing such a valuable insight into the rich diversity of retired ministry. And I wish you every success in the work that you hope to do as Dean.
Thank you, Rebecca.
You've been listening to CMD Bite Size Podcasts, produced by the Diocese of Truro. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do follow and share. To listen to similar podcasts, please visit the Truro Diocese website. If there is a subject you would like us to include, please email us at ministry@truro.anglican.org.